Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through J.W. Cole Financial, Inc., member FINRA, and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC-registered investment advisor. 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana. Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Big Show, Your Money with David Hayes. We have a treat in store today. Andy Maller, divorce attorney here in Bloomington, is going to be joining me. We're going to be talking about the realities of marriage and divorce, unfortunately, in America. What's the financial impact of divorce, how to navigate through it, and what are things you should consider before you remarry? Blending families, getting remarried when you're older and the kids are gone, all of this and more with Andy Maller in just a few minutes. But before we do that, let's do a little news of the week brought to you by Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, our new book, a resource for adults age 50 and older. Get it on any online retailer out there. Let's talk a little bit about stocks. Stocks rose on Thursday broadly after several big companies reported better-than-expected earnings. The rise in U.S. stocks followed a rally in Europe as the news in Greece came out that the parliament approved tax hikes, cuts to pensions, and other measures demanded by its creditors. The country got more loans to assist its banks. Speaking of Greece, Greece did approve the austerity measures. No one's happy about it over there, especially the dissent from the governing left party. We'll see. I'm sure there's more to say and more to see about that down the road. And what about our little Greece from the Financial Times? Illinois, our Jimmy, our producer from the great city of Chicago. You know what, Jim? It's a good thing your pension isn't from there. They're only 40% funded. They're about $1.5 billion, that's with a B, underfunded. Now, they're not alone. Kentucky, Connecticut, they also have less than half their pension obligations covered. Kentucky just has 44% of its $42 billion pension obligation covered. Connecticut, about 48%. But we have a few states like North Carolina, Oregon, South Dakota, Wisconsin. They all have 96 to 100% coverage of their pension obligations. I think here in Indiana, we're in the high 80s, low 90s, something like that. And then lastly, one of the worst articles I've seen in a long time came out of Consumer Reports just about 11 hours ago. Retirement planning for safe, let me just illustrate that, safe ways to boost your retirement income. You know, they start off pretty good. They talk about even retirees who do everything right find themselves coming up a little bit short when it comes to affording things in retirement. They go on to talk about Medicare and prescriptions and all that. But here's their ideas. One, certificates of deposit. Are you kidding me? I mean, that's like 0% rate of return. That's death by a slow bleed. And then you get into dividend-paying stocks. Let me go back to this. Safe ways to boost your income. Dividend-paying stocks. Dividends are only guaranteed or contractual for a quarter. They can change. If the stock goes down, then you're going to lose money. They had a couple of decent ideas. They talked about some guaranteed income annuities, but they also did mention bond funds. Not a big fan of bond funds right now. You know, interest rates go up, values go down. It's going to be kind of hard to, recover from that. So individual bonds, I would prefer over bond funds right now. So folks, when you get online and you go on Yahoo and you look at all these financial articles, please, please, please take them with a grain of salt. All right, guys, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Andy Maller will be joining me live in the studio. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. You know, I have never done a show about divorce. I ran across a good friend of the show, good friend of mine, also an attorney, Tom Bunger, today as I was preparing for the show, and he screams across the street at me and he says, "Hey, I think that's going to be a great show tonight. Andy, you'll do a terrific job." And Andy Maller is my guest. He's a partner with Maller Grodner. He offices right here in Bloomington, Indiana and Indianapolis. He received his degree as Doctor of Jurisprudence back in the glory days of IU, 1974. He's also admitted to the bar the very same year. He had to have started when he was 13 years old by the looks of him, but he also is a registered family law mediator, certified family law specialist. He's also an author and contributor to several books and articles, including When a Simple I Do Won't Do, How to Draft a Premarital Agreement and Survive. And just so you know, folks, I told my wife, do not listen to the show tonight. Andy Maller is my guest. Andy, thanks for taking the time. And again, Tom Bunger's voting you number one tonight. Yeah. He thinks you're going to do a great job.
If Tom's on my side, we're there.
We're there.
We're solid, Dave.
You know, let's talk about the realities of America and marriage and divorce. You know, we all go into it with the best intentions, but sometimes things simply don't work out. In fact, the last statistic I read is more than half the times it doesn't work out.
Yeah, it is more than half. You know, Indiana doesn't actually keep statistics like other states, but it's about a 50% divorce rate which is it's high. The good news is that rate has not been going up. That rate flattened out. And what we're finding out now is that as people get married later in life, mm-hmm. they make more mature decisions, and the divorce rate is actually declining a little bit. But still, 50% is a pretty high rate. And, you know, nobody ever gets married with the idea of getting divorced. It's a happy day. Divorce is a horrible day. And, you know, we try to caution people, especially in situations where they're either bringing in assets that they've earned before the marriage or potentially going to inherit assets from their family, to consider the fact that, you know, there is a 50% rate out there, and that's a pretty high statistic.
Yeah, exactly. Now, a lot of people, like you said, younger people get married on a whim, get divorced, get married. There's a whole population of those folks out here who we're addressing in this show are what I'm going to call the average American family. They have kids, they have homes, they have that's the people that listen to this show. And I've kind of noticed, just from my own client base, as you know, it's the baby boomers, a lot of them are struggling and looking to maybe get divorced after their kids have gone. You know, you raise your kids, you go work all the time, you're in sporting events, and all of a sudden they're gone. You're empty nesters, you're staring at each other, and maybe you don't like what you're looking at.
Yeah, well, you know, in order to sustain a relationship, especially a marital relationship, there's got to be commonality of values. There's got to be mutual trust. There's got to be intimacy, and not just sexual, but feeling connected. And there's got to be humor. And a lot of times what happens is that all the energy in a relationship is going to taking care of the children. The couple really hasn't worked on their relationship. Mm-hmm. The kids are gone, and all of a sudden they look at each other, and they don't like what they see, and they want to move on.
Yeah.
So it's a very typical time for people to come see us about dissolution. And one thing I want to say is, you know, our job, you know, you said I'm a divorce lawyer. Our job is really to help people. And when people come to see us, we don't push them into divorce. What we do is we listen to them and we try to fashion something that's going to be there. Now, some people, divorce is the only answer because you can find out in a relatively quickly that there's been a lot of misery for a long time and they've been thinking about it. For other people, counseling, use of other resources, joint therapy, mm-hmm. And you know, if it doesn't work, maybe divorce is going to be the answer. But for us, it's not where we start. We start with trying to find out what's best for that person in terms of what their needs are at that moment.
I read something once about the differences of men and women, and women, you know, when they're over it, and the dude doesn't even get it till the U-Haul is backed up to the house and the stuff's being thrown in there, and then they're like, what happened?
Yeah, we see a lot, and I think that is somewhat true. We see a lot of men who feel blindsided because they think, you know, they've been great providers, they think everything's okay, and all of a sudden they find out that their spouse isn't happy and wants a divorce. And I think that generally is true. I think most people, before they come see me, and I don't mean to be flip, but no one ever comes to see me because they had a bad meal. No one ever comes in the next day and says, gosh, you know, I had a horrible dinner, it's time for a divorce. It's a painful process that people go through. Years ago, the Indiana legislature wanted to have mandatory counseling. And a group of us from the Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers said, you know, the people we see, they've been through counseling. Mm-hmm. They've been through this painful process. It's not a whim decision, a whimsical decision. So, you know, it's very difficult. I try to honor everybody who comes in our office, and all our divorce lawyers with me do the same, because we know how difficult it is to make that appointment and come see us.
You're like a psychologist. I was reading an article by my favorite, Dr. Phil, on emotions to expect when going through a divorce, and he goes through a number of them, like anger, shock, rejection, despair, fear, bitterness, loss, and then I added my own, selective memory. There's a lot of that going on.
A lot of it. A lot of people can rewrite history when they come see me.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be continuing with Andy Maller. I'm not going to say divorce attorney. I'm going to say certified family law specialist. He's a helper of people. And we're going to come back and talk about when divorce is intimate. You know what I'm trying to say.
Well,
it's around the corner.
David,
this is live radio.
If it's intimate, you probably won't be getting divorced. So.
And then we're going to talk about settlements and how they work and managing expectations as you enter this, what could be and will be probably a very turbulent time in your life. Fair settlements, things like that, child support, all kinds of stuff, things to do after the divorce is over. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Andy Maller, certified family law specialist, listed in Best Lawyers in America since 1989. That's back when I was running the Wishbone over to Ellettsville. Super lawyer since 2003, partner with Jeff Grodner. And he joins me now. We're talking about divorce. And Andy, unfortunately, like you said, a lot of times they come to you whenever the horse has left the barn, divorce is right around the corner, and now it comes down to settlement time. You know, they have to start talking about money and income and spousal maintenance. And I think your job many times is managing expectations. So talk us through the settlement process and what's fair.
Well, you know, it's absolutely managing expectations because Indiana has a statute, and that statute, the Dissolution Act, is used in every dissolution. And what that statute says is that all property, no matter how it's titled or where it came from, is in the marital pot subject to a presumptive 50-50 division. Now, that presumptive division can be altered based on only five factors. And those factors is what that's what we have to look at to decide whether there is an equitable settlement that's going to be different than that 50-50. Now, because of that, if you can take the emotions out of divorce, most people, we can readily...
Is that possible?
No. The problem is that marriage is an intimate relationship and divorce is a business relationship, but you can't separate those two, mm-hmm. and you just can't do it. So, you know, our job is to set reasonable fence posts for people, what we think their best case is going to be and what we think their worst case is going to be, and to try to counsel them as to what resources they will have going forward and how to handle those resources. And you know this, David, we'll mm-hmm. involve financial planners initially if we think the person has been the unpropertied spouse who needs help going forward, needs help with budgets, needs help with investments. But, you know, our job is to keep those expectations reasonable. I will tell you that in cases in which people can recognize, deal with the cards straight up, be honest with each other, not hide assets, be sensitive to the fact that even with the dissolution of their marriage, that if they have children, they're not divorcing those children, that they have to find a way to be cooperative with each other. In those cases, about 90% of those cases are going to resolve in some kind of settlement, either by the parties in settlement conference or by going through mediation. Mm-hmm. It's the 10% of the cases that are so difficult, the ones where people are at loggerheads, they're fighting over things that have no value except they can't get away from the emotional wars that they're in.
Yeah, hard to reason with unreasonable people, and sometimes that's when people are the most unreasonable. Let's talk about fair is not always equal. I know years ago I went after a certification called a Certified Divorce Planner. I got it, but it was one of those weekend warrior courses. It didn't really mean a whole lot from a designation standpoint. But I was involved in one case only, where I actually had to, you know, go to mediation and present this idea that we had a professional. He was in his 40s. He was going to make a gazillion dollars, mom with kid. I mean, and it was going to work out to where the settlement was like 80-20 from an asset standpoint. People were mad at me, and I thought, you know what, I'm not doing that anymore. So you have to have some pretty tough skin to work in this area, because one side's going to be probably a little happier than the other side.
Yeah,
or they're both going to be mad.
And probably, you know, this is a non-alimony state. We only have alimony for incapacitated spouses and limited alimony for what's called rehabilitative maintenance. In a non-alimony state, 50-50 probably isn't fair if you have a great disparity of income between mm-hmm. the spouses. And if you think about this, what you did in that case is you looked at the future income of one of the spouses and how quickly that person could get that marital pot kind of recreated.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And if you look at that, there's no way that 50-50 is fair. The difficulty, and probably you were right with your 80-20, the chance of getting 80-20 from a court, pretty minuscule, very minuscule. You know, we tell people if we have a disparity of income and we have a property spouse and a non-property spouse that 50-50 isn't fair, and because that's their worst day in court at that point, in mediation, normally you'll see those cases go 55, 60, sometimes a little bit more. The reality is that if you have somebody who's earning $500,000 and someone is going to be earning $35,000,
right.
Person earning $500,000 is going to recuperate from divorce very quickly. The person earning $35,000 will never financially recuperate.
Yeah, and I see a lot of folks that wish they could retire, but because they had a divorce 15 years ago, they're still recuperating even now. Let's talk a little bit on the child support side of things. You know, I think, once again, people think that it's pretty arbitrary, but there also is statute as it relates to Indiana child support.
We have the child support guidelines. They're mandatory. They must be used in every case. The guidelines are based on what's called an income shares model. So you take the gross income of each spouse, and that gross income is predicated on a person with about a 21.88% tax rate. So if a person is a higher income person, you have to make an adjustment. But basically, it's gross income. The other factors that are there are overnights. The more overnights, the less support. Again, if you look at the person making $500,000 and the person making $35,000, it's not fair to give, I think, in my opinion, not fair to give the $500,000 earner all these credits. But the trend right now is to increase those overnights, to have more of, not exactly equal access, but more access for both parents. And what that results using the guidelines is the higher income earner is going to actually be paying less support.
Right.
And again, in terms of equality, that may not be equal. You know, what we try to tell people is, look, the presumptive overnights are about 98 a year. Mm-hmm. If you're making $500,000 a year and your spouse is making $35,000 a year, even if you get 150 overnights, why don't you just peg it to the 98? Because the difference is not going to affect your bottom line. It will affect your children's life dramatically.
Well, we're going back to the splitting of assets. What if you have a couple that's, you know, lived high on the hog, they haven't really saved anything but make great income, and now you're in this division process? Is that where a spousal maintenance agreement could come into play?
Well, people can agree to spousal maintenance. Unless the factors are there, a court can't order it. Mm-hmm. If people agree to spousal maintenance, a judge in Indiana can't later modify it. Because a judge can't order it at the time of the trial, they also can't modify it subsequently. But we see a lot of cases where there have been great earnings, but they're the assets,
no savings,
yeah. Nothing. So
I'm putting a talk together right now on the retirement crisis in America, and it's about the, you know, the high income earner not saving enough and going to either work till they die, or everyone else is going to be supporting them. So
yeah. I mean, in our Indianapolis office, we joke it's called the Carmel divorce. You know, I mean, people living in 1.5 million homes, and you look and they've got, you know, two mortgages on a home. They're driving Porsches that are hocked, and they're making great money, but they're spending a lot more than they're making.
Yeah. Let's talk about what you do after the divorce. Do you give folks a checklist of things like, hey, you may want to update your beneficiary, you might want to change your will, you may want to do this, you might want to do that?
We talk about estate planning at two times. The first time is at the initial conference that we're going to have to look at things like healthcare powers and powers of attorney that may be changed at that time. Sometimes it's difficult to change wills and trusts because there is a restraining order on changing any of that, changing life insurance. But at the end, we have a letter that we send at the conclusion of a divorce, which outlines everything that needs to be done. And at that point is when, you know, if the case was referred by an estate planning attorney, we'll get it back to the attorney who referred it. If it wasn't referred by an estate planning attorney, normally we'll take care of the clients at that time.
I had a case up in Chicago where a gentleman was divorced. He remarried, and we're going to come back with when you remarry, the things you need to do. He never updated a beneficiary form. So bottom line was, it was still his ex-spouse, but he had remarried, and it was an ERISA plan. So. And basically, because the current spouse didn't sign off, fortunately, she got the money. But those kind of things just need to be crossed and dotted.
Absolutely. And you know this. So many people, you ask them, who's the beneficiary of insurance? They don't remember.
They don't know. I don't know.
Or if they tell you who it is, unless you check it yourself, they're wrong.
Yeah. And I would never assume that it was the way you wanted it until you have verification back from the company. Folks, that is the will of that money. That's where that money is going to go 99% of the time. When we come back, we're going to continue with Andy Maller, family law attorney, and we're going to talk about remarrying. You know, when you remarry and you have blended family and younger kids still at home, and then when you're older, I have a lot of clients, Andy, that are now 60s and 70s that remarry later in life, the things they need to do to protect themselves. We'll be back with Andy Maller. I'm not going to call it. He's a family law attorney. This is your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Andy Maller is my guest. He is a family law attorney, a partner with Jeff Grodner. And, you know, as folks think about, okay, I've been divorced, now I might get remarried, a whole other set of circumstances come up. Andy, when you're young, maybe you're in your 30s or 40s, you go through divorce, maybe you both have kids. I mean, I kind of come from I'm a product of that environment. Dad, mom remarry, you have stepkids involved. Is there any advice for people that are going through that type of situation of things they should be aware, at least aware about, or maybe check the box?
Yeah, I think that's a great time to talk about premarital agreements with people. It's also a great time to talk about counseling. what we see, David, is a lot of times there's a rebound effect where people go through a divorce, their ego is bruised, and they really start making unwise decisions about who to marry next because they want to get back in the marry game so quickly. So I think counseling, slowing down, talking to your client about the difficulties that were there before, and certainly a premarital agreement. When you have a blended family and children from, two different parents, and each one of them has brought assets into that relationship, mm-hmm. I think that's where a premarital agreement makes great sense. You know, a lot of young kids who get married, they have nothing.
Right, right.
Ironically now, we're doing premarital agreements all the time. When dad and mom bring the kid in, the kid's 23 years old, they don't have anything, but they're going to inherit a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And what is being kept out of the marital pot is not the kids' efforts, but what they're going to get by way of gift or inheritance from their family. But the blended family counseling is critical. Being honest about the relationship is critical, and being honest about the economics. Because if you can't talk about the economics, you know, people will tell me, well, I can't do a premarital agreement. It's going to ruin the love and the marriage.
Yeah, right.
If you can't talk about economics going into a relationship, it could be a very difficult relationship later. There's, again, the commonality of values. If you take one spouse who is spending like crazy and the other is hoarding like crazy, that's not going to work for a very long relationship. And that's what's got to be probed in counseling to make sure that they share the same values in terms of children. The other part of blended families that's so difficult is discipline. You know, who in the house is going to be taking care of the children? One of the saddest cases I ever had, and I have no explanation for this, David, none, but a mom left the relationship. She was having an affair. Her kids had nothing to do with her. The father became this incredibly supportive dad who was there for everything. We tried with counseling. We tried with therapists to kind of restore the mom's relation with the kids. Then the dad, like 4 or 5 years later, ends up dating somebody, and the kids ended up not having anything to do with the dad. Now, something was obviously wrong in that situation, but because, you know, when you're going through a divorce, everybody we see is depressed.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody,
right.
You know, everybody is in this. But what we forget is that the children are also depressed. And when that divorce is over, to bring people in too quickly can be very unhealthy for children. To bring people in without really analyzing the strengths of that relationship and the weaknesses, mm-hmm. You know, what do we have to do can be very dangerous.
So I think you have three stages of life. You have the young couples that we just talked about. Now you have that mid late 50s guy and gal who, you know, like we said earlier, kids are gone. They find someone else. They have assets. They bring them into, they get married. At that point, I think people struggle with who to put down as beneficiaries on things and understanding folks that, let's say that, and this has happened in my practice, couple remarries, adult children, the dad dies, all the money goes to the stepmom. She intentionally left some money aside with his kids as beneficiaries, but then she got mad at him. And next thing you know, she was changing the beneficiary form, and she can legally do that, and then she dies. And then all the money went to her kids. And then old Dave was up in Morgantown at a court hearing because his kids were disputing this.
Right.
Well, guess what happened? They lost because it went by the beneficiary form.
Right, right. And you know, what we encourage people to do with children from a previous relationship, carve something out. Either carve it out by way of a separate revocable trust.
Life insurance,
whatever. Carve it out so it's there so the kids get it. Carve it out for the other spouse's kids. And then, you know, it also gets interesting later on, because if the relationship between all those kids, all the beneficiaries, are great. You know, I'm finishing a plan right now with four kids, one from the relationship, three from the other, you know, and they want to leave everything to all four kids.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, that's great if we knew what the order of deaths was going to be.
Right.
Because the second person can go change that plan and leave it any place they want. So carving it out with life insurance is a great way of making sure that the children from the first relationship are going to be taken care of.
Yeah, and you can use trust and different things, too.
Absolutely.
If you want to. Now let's flash forward to the older folks. You know, they have a death of a spouse, and then they remarry. I have two couples currently that 168, 173, both are getting ready to get remarried. The kids aren't very happy about it. Of course, one thinks the other one's a money-grubbing, you know, fool. And anyway, it's terrible right now. But they're working through it. Talk about the prenuptial agreements for those kind of people. And I know you have a funny story you want to tell me about one of your prenups.
Yeah, well, you know, premarital agreements in Indiana, this is one of the easiest states to enforce a premarital agreement because we don't have alimony and because we have a marital pot. You know, if you go to Illinois, the way property is distributed in Illinois is totally different. So is Michigan. So is Kentucky. Indiana, with a marital pot, where all assets, no matter where they come from, is in that pot. You've got to do a premarital in that situation. And, you know, the premarital, we tell people they've got to be fair. But the reality is there have been premarital agreements upheld by the Indiana courts where one spouse was married for a relatively long time and ended up with nothing. I think that the essence of a good premarital is to recognize what's coming in, recognize what the future contributions are going to be, and then have some fairness based on the length of the relationship. But that said, that couple that you described, they've got to do a premarital. You know, we tell almost every client at the conclusion of a divorce, if you're going to remarry with these assets that you've got, please do a premarital agreement. And, you know, many people listen. Some people, you know, they're afraid to bring up the topic because they're afraid it's going to wreck their relationship. And as I said, if that's the situation, we see those people a second time.
I just did a talk on Social Security and claiming strategies today at the Monroe County Library, and we were looking at longevity. And then if you're a married couple age 65, there's a 41% chance one of you will make it to age 95. So people that get married in their late 60s doesn't mean they couldn't have a 30-year relationship together. Yeah. So we, you know, you've got to plan for this. So when you talk about premarital agreements, that addresses the divorce issue only.
And death.
It does address the death issue as well.
Premaritals can agree, can address death and divorce. It doesn't have to address death, but it will address both death by a waiver. Now, what we're doing now is we're taking the property that we want out of the pot, and we're referring to that as protected property, okay? And when you think about it, that makes some sense in terms of logic. So instead of having a complete waiver in the event of death, what is being waived is the protected property. That may be what you brought in. It may be the gains on that. It may be a pension from a previous relationship. That protected property in that situation is going to go to the kids from each, you know, the kids from the prior relationships, and not be divided in death or divorce.
Tell us about the craziest thing you've seen when it comes to premarital agreements.
There's some I can't talk about on a show about financial planning the family has listened to, but we did have one, and the funny thing here is we knew the attorney who drafted it, but he never owned up to drafting it, and it was a big...
Sounds like my 14-year-old son.
No, this it was a big Indianapolis
firm. It wasn't
him
that drafted it, was it? Okay.
It could have been. I should check that out. But it was a big Indianapolis firm, and in the agreement, it said that if the husband cheated, basically, and the wife filed for divorce, she would get nothing. But if she cheated, so basically it was a license to cheat. And we still can't believe that anybody actually put that in an agreement. So basically,
well, I can see the intent. It was to make sure they figured out a way to work it out. But that's pretty insane.
You know, David, I think the intent in his mind was to play around out there because he had this agreement. And ironically, he went to two attorneys up in Indy. They said, you know, these are a contract. There's consideration with the marriage. We think that even though it's a crazy clause, it's probably going to be enforceable. And the funny thing that happened in this case is that we played our hand. We were bluffing to get through. We didn't litigate this. We settled this in mediation. And the client that we had, who was the wife, ended up with a tremendous amount of the marital estate because the husband wanted to end up and keep stock and pay her cash. The stock was because he had a personal relationship with the owner of the company. 2 months after the divorce was finalized, the stock all went into the toilet bowl. So millions of dollars became nothing.
Probably Conseco.
Oh, it sounds familiar to me.
That sounds like a bitter end to a tough deal. Hey, lastly, I wanted to ask you about, of course, the Supreme Court ruled not long ago that same-sex couples can marry. And folks, I'm just saying, be careful what you wish for, because that means divorces are going to be coming down the road. Anything happening in your world to kind of bone up for this?
We've been doing separations for gay couples for a long time, and we've been doing cohabitation agreements. And ironically, you know, I'm the chair of the annual Family Law Institute, and at the 11th Institute, this will be the 13th in October, but at the 11th, I stood up there and to talk about cohabitation agreements with gay couples and said, you know, I can't imagine Indiana ever having gay marriage. Well, now every state has gay marriage, and it's going to change the playing field. You know, things like premarital agreements, still very important. Mm-hmm. What it's going to do is probably you're going to see the divorce rate increase a little bit. You're going to be seeing a lot more gay marriages, and as a factor of that, you're going to be seeing gay dissolutions. But, you know, the good thing is before we didn't have a statute that we could look at.
Mm-hmm.
So when you did a divorce, and that's in parentheses for a gay couple, you could look at joint property being divided, but the statutory scheme and the law and the legal scheme was never very clear. And now at least we have clarity. I think that's very, very important. It's also going to be great for estate planning.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're already working with a couple of couples in talking about tax and Social Security. There's a whole world has now been opened up to the professionals.
After Windsor going back and amending returns and all that.
Yep.
I think it's a great change in the law, but I think you're going to see a little spike in the divorce rate because you're going to be seeing a lot more marriages. But, you know, again, everything we talked about now, instead of having a class that, you know, you had to kind of guess and put together, mm-hmm. now at least we have some clarity in terms of how divorce will be. And I think that makes a huge difference for them and for Indiana and for the law.
Andy Mallard's been my guest, certified law specialist. So I'm going to tell you folks that if you're contemplating divorce, give Andy a call immediately. He's not going to push you towards dissolution. He's going to work with you to try to help you make the right decisions, inform you, and it's a good outcome. So Andy, for being on the show, I wanted to give you a copy of my new book, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning. You can read it in your spare time. I know you're headed to New York. So thanks for being part of the program. I know this does not impress you because you've written and contributed to, well, lots and lots of books and journals, but here you go, my man.
Thank you, David. It's been great being here with you, and thank you so much.
Thank you, and safe travels. Folks, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we have questions of the week. We have a guy that was trying to figure out how to come up with $75,000, but all he really had was 401ks and IRAs. Later on, we were talking about mutual funds, and if you have money in bond funds, how can you avoid maybe losing money there? So we're going to take a break. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks again to Andy Mallard. Well, that was an interesting show. You know, when you talk about divorce and prenuptial agreements and things you need to be concerned about and watch out for, but I really liked the comment that Andy made about, hey, we're here to help people have a positive outcome. It's not about you walking into his office and they're writing up the dissolution papers for a divorce. So again, thank you to Andy Mallard for being on the big show. Hey, let's talk about questions of the week. Had several of them this week, but we narrowed it down to about three or four. First one was, a guy was buying a house. He's still working. He needed about $75,000 for his down payment. Now, he's going to sell his other home, his existing home, but he needed a few months to get that ready. He basically didn't have much cash laying around, really no cash laying around, but he had a large 401k plan, and he has some IRA. So he's trying to figure out the best way to come up with $75,000 for a down payment. Well, my answer to him was go for the cheapest source of money. Number one, you can always go to your IRA, pull the money out, but then you take the risk of not getting it back in within 60 days. Because if you put money back in a IRA within 60 days, and you can do it one time every 365 days, then it is penalty and tax-free. But if you miss that 60-day window, you'll pay taxes and penalties. So that's probably not a good idea. You could always take an equity line of credit on your existing home if you don't owe that much. Evaluate the cost. Some banks do it at no cost, so that might be a very easy way to get that money. And most of those loans are around 3-3.5%. So if you're not going to borrow for very long, that's not going to be very costly, a lot less costly than taxes and penalties. And then I checked with the lender, and they offer bridge loans. So if you're in that situation, a lot of them will give you a bridge loan that will, and that's if your credit's good and your cash flow's good and you make the payments, they'll do that for you to help you bridge between the two homes. Or a combo, and this is what I came up with for him. I said, okay, you need $75,000. Let's look at this. How about a 401k loan to yourself? Now, the maximum that you can get on a 401k loan is $50,000 or 50% of the account value. That's how that works. So he could only get 50. But a lot of times you'll hear, don't ever take a 401k loan. Well, I would agree to that for the most part. But in this case, you're going to be paying yourself back. You're going to be paying yourself back 4 or 5% interest during the holding period, and then when you're done, you sell your house, you can pay it back. And then just get a bridge loan or some other type of financing for that extra $25,000. I really like that idea, and so did he. And all it took for him to do is jump online, press a couple buttons, and he had 50 grand in his checkbook. So that was even easier. Here's another question. I am in the 2020 fund through my 401k at work. Because I plan to retire in 5 or 6 years. So that's about 5 years away. Most people do that. So it says, though, when I look at it, it consists of 40% bonds and 60% stocks. And they say, I'm less worried about the stocks. That's kind of interesting. But I'm more worried about the bonds losing money as interest rates go up. Well, that's also a very valid concern. So I answered back. It was an excellent question, as always. The 2020 fund or funds like it are called lifestyle or target date funds. And just because you're going to retire in 2020 still means you might have 30 years to live in retirement. So they'll generally keep you invested heavily in stocks and bonds. But if you're worried about the bond funds, and that's really your question, I think you should be. I mean, although the 10-year treasury is about 2.5% now, most of the price moves are probably already priced in the fixed income. But nonetheless, if rates keep moving up, you will see more declines. There's no way around it. So here's what I would do. If your fund 401k has what's called a stable value fund or even a money market, move 40% of your money to that. Then reallocate the other 60 to your equity funds. You're still 60-40, just like you were before, but you've insulated that 40% from loss. Now, another idea would be a floating rate fund. If you're wanting to protect yourself from a rising interest rate environment, you could do that. So you're not going to make much, but you're not going to lose money as well. So you're just considered sitting on the bench for a while with that bond money until you see what happens. And I've actually counseled a few people in that direction recently. All right, here's another one question. I recently bought an indexed annuity with part of my retirement account. If you want to know all about annuities, you can read our book, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning. We have an entire section on the four different types of annuities out there. But here's the question. It's more of a beneficiary question. She says, I have a trust for my grandson, and it's listed as a 25% beneficiary on all of my other accounts. With my other three kids, the other 75% or 25% each. But they say they found an insurance company, this insurance company that holds the annuity, will not allow a trust to be the beneficiary. And like she said, all of her other accounts allowed it, so she wasn't sure why. Well, my answer is sometimes companies can be funny about this, especially insurance companies. I mean, one firm that we use for IRA accounts will take just about any language an attorney can conjure up, but other times they won't. You just never know. But here's the way I'd handle it, to keep it really simple. If you want to own the index annuity, own it. Just make the trust for your grandson a larger percentage on the other accounts, and then leave your three kids as the sole beneficiaries on the fixed annuity. I mean, as an example, let's say you have $300,000 in an IRA and $100,000 in this IRA annuity, so a total of $400,000. Here's how you could balance it out. Make the trust 33% beneficiary on the $300,000. That's $100,000, 25% of the overall, just like you wanted, and then split the other 67% among the other three and list them equally, and then it all works out in the end. That math works, especially when you use a simple number like $400,000. All right, here's another question. It actually comes from a good friend of mine who's considering leaving his company soon. He says, simple question, maybe. And he says, I've been with my company for 3 years. The retirement plan allows an employee to be fully vested after 5 years. When I review my investment account statement from my employer, how do I determine what is mine and what is not? If I were to leave the company, I want to make sure I get my full allotment. Well, let's first explain what vesting is. Vesting is ownership. It's not invested, it's vesting. I'm vested in this. So if it's over 5 years, it's probably 20% a year. So he's more than likely 60% vested. Now, that's only in the company money, the money that the company has given you. So either through a match or some kind of a profit-sharing plan contribution. If you have put money in the plan, that's your money 100%. So you're really only talking about the 40% that the company may keep back if you left early. So I would tell you this, you might double check when your hire date was. So let's say that your hire date was August 1st and you were thinking about leaving next week. Well, why don't you hang in there another couple of weeks and get past that August 1st date, pick up another 20% of that employer money. The other thing is, I would be really surprised if you went on the website and it wasn't there. Most people put it on the website. If not, call the company plan. So with the investment company, call them or the administrator. They'll keep track of all this. But again, beware of the rules so that you don't leave money on the table. We're going to take a break, folks. When we come back, we're going to be wrapping up the big show. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Again, a special thanks to my friend Andy Maller, family law attorney. He was in talking about the issues that folks face when they go through divorce and also things to prepare for. as you remarry. So, Andy Mallergan, thank you for that. Next week, Doug Hughes and Wayne Thacker from our Office of Comprehensive Financial will be pinch hitting for old Dave as I head out of town for a week. My son goes to high school this year, so we only have a few more years left where he's going to be legally obligated to do the things that we say that he should do. So we are basically capturing him in the car, and we're going to take a drive up to Minnesota, enjoy a Kenny Chesney concert. He's getting opened up by Jason Aldean on Saturday night. Then we're going to visit some friends over in Lake City, Minnesota, and then back over to Wisconsin Dells for a few days, and then back home to B-Town. So next week I will be calling in to both Glass in the Morning on Wednesday from Wisconsin, and I will also call in on Thursday evening to say hello to the guys here doing the big show. Hey, I wanted to bring this up as well. Thank you, thank you, thank you to all those that attended the Social Security workshop that we had at the Monroe County Library. We had a good showing today of about 20 to 24 people and about 45 minutes long, and I could tell at the end they were grateful for the information. So again, thank you for attending that. We enjoyed doing them, as you can probably tell if you came. So again, thanks for that. We'll be doing more of those. I don't know exactly when. We're going to maybe branch out and do some in Bedford and around the surrounding areas. So you will keep you abreast of that as time goes on. Also, are you looking for a speaker at one of your upcoming service club meetings? You know, I've been really trying to get out to talk with more and more people. You know, I wrote a piece just today about getting out to talk to people. You know, the host of this program, co-author of the new book, Congressional Advisor on Retirement Issues, will come speak to your group on the retirement crisis in America and how to solve it. Well, that's me, and it's about a 15 to 20 minute discussion. It'll bring an awareness to the brewing problem in America and how to fix it, and we'll show you behind the curtain of congressional lawmakers and what they're thinking the solutions are, and what we can do to prevent the crisis from unfolding. So we'll bring you up to speed on changes to Social Security, IRAs, and all kinds of stuff. So if you're looking for a speaker, reach out to us at cfci.us. Folks, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you again in 2 weeks. Goodbye. Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Guest opinions on this show do not necessarily represent those of the radio station, David Hayes, or CFCI. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC-registered investment advisor. 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana.